Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome. You are tuned in to A Let's Celebrate, a show that's all about acknowledgement and celebration. And just so happy that you're here with me tonight. This is Chakaysha. Yes, Chakaysha is here with you. And I am so happy that you are here with me. And this show was really put together from the International Black Summit. This is one of the International Black Summit talk show. It's being brought to you here on Sunday, the second Sunday of the month. And I really picked this show because I really wanted to be inside of acknowledgement, praise, and celebration of who we are as a people and the contribution that we are to the world. Like we are to the world, but especially that you are to the world. You know, like, just want to acknowledge you. Just want to be in celebration of you. And, you know, I usually have guests on that I want to acknowledge and celebrate, and we have a very special guest. And in just a couple of minutes, I will tell you more about that guest. But first, we want to start off with the declaration of the International Black Summit. And so we're going to start with that. And with the declaration, we're going to start with, we declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. And we assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. Guess what? We always listen for and grant being to the possibility and the creation of unpredictable results. Guess what? Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. Looking for our third line to come in, and maybe our switchboard is not open. I don't have the switchboard up, and so we're going to go into that third line, and I'm just going to go ahead and do that. We were looking right here. So first of all, not only do I stand up, we stand for the expression of our spirituality. Ending, that means stopping, that means not having happen over and over, the murders of our men, women, and especially our children. Hey, guess what? We're going to be building economies responsible for what? Funding our community. Then we're moving on, we're looking at our bodies, and we are maintaining wellness of being. Where? In our bodies. And guess what? We're going to provide something. And what we're going to provide are human services. And when you have all of that in the mix, something starts showing up like establishing not just relationships, but nurturing relationships. And then you know what? We're going to look at altering. That's right, changing. That's like having it be new. The conversation of who we are in the media. You know, the news, what you read in the newspaper, what you see on the TV, the talk that you hear around town. So we're altering the conversation of who we are in the media. And we are forever looking at all of the possible ways. It's like saying yes 1,000 different times. It's like, how do you praise people? Because we want to empower our youth. Which then brings us to, we declare, that's right, we're speaking, that our community manifest, that means shows up big time. That means up in your face. That means you know we are there. Manifest itself in the world as a contribution in the what? In the transformation of the universe. You know, that means everything, all the stars, all the places, all the galaxies. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. And as we like to remember, this is now June 14th, 2009. And it's wherever you are, a moment of silence. Okay, thank you. I'm looking to see how our switchboard is going, if we have someone that's taking that over, or am I still coming in with switchboard? But right now, I just want to just thank folks being here, and I hear something that is always present is our team. So I hear our team is now here with us. Okay, great. Okay, we've concluded our declaration. And tonight, as I said, we have a special guest. And that special guest will actually be me that we're celebrating. That's right. If you don't celebrate yourself, who else will?
All right.
My team is here, and I'm going to turn it over to Henrietta.
All right, yours, baby. Okay. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are loud and
clear. All right, Shakesha. I like that declaration. Let's celebrate. Let's celebrate the celebrator tonight, Shakesha. In a special three-part program that we wanted to share with our summer community and, as the declaration says, all communities. Online with me is Glenn Greenwich in New York and Clara Lyons Devine in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And, of course, Shakesha is in Atlanta, calling from the facilitator body meeting. And I'm Henrietta Bird. I'm in Chicago, Illinois. So welcome, everyone, to a special segment as we celebrate the host of the show, Shakesha Showers, or as they know her in the hospital as Phyllis Showers, okay? And that's a special name because we had to really get with this Phyllis thing, okay? And so we start tonight with a journey that started back a while, a few weeks ago, maybe even longer. But we wanted to share this journey to the hospital. The second part of the show will be the stay in the hospital, and the third part of the show will be coming out of the hospital. So stay tuned as we go through this special segment on Shakesha Showers as we celebrate her tonight on International Black Summit Talk Show with your hosts, Glenn Greenwich, Henrietta Bird, Clara Lyons Devine, and Shakesha Showers. Glenn, can you distinguish the term for us, hospital?
Hospital, an institution in which sick or injured persons are given medical or surgical treatment.
Okay.
Second definition, a similar institute for the care of animals. The third definition, a repair shop for specific portable objects, Violin Hospital, a doll hospital. Now, this is the fourth one, which is interesting, and this is the British flavor of it. An institution supported by charity or taxes for the care of the needy.
Okay, can you repeat that one?
The last one is the British version of it, and it's an institution supported by charity or taxes for the care of the needy.
Okay, for the care of the needy. Now, as we distinguish this term hospital, we took a look at it in a lot of different ways, and oftentimes instead of us speaking the word hospital, we would say the word hotel. Okay, we would say hotel sometimes, you know, just a Freudian slip maybe. We would say hospital. Also, it says hospice, and you know, we know hospice as a different way in these terms. But also, there's a definition. It's just the bottom line is it's a place where you go to be cared for in some form or fashion. Now, Takesha, when we talk about this journey to the hospital, can you kind of take us back to where you believe the journey began?
Yeah. I really think it didn't start the weekend of June 2nd with me when I made my request to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I really think this started like 2 years ago in 2007 when I was preparing to do what we call an advanced course for Landmark, where I was being a course supervisor. And we call that a course, and we always put something at stake. And what I put at stake was my desire to make a difference in New Orleans. I mean, they were still showing us very vivid pictures of the devastation that was happening in New Orleans. And at first I kept saying, somebody should go do something. The government should go do something. And then I got that I was the government. I distinguished myself as government for the people, by the people. And then I went, I can do something about this. I'm a school teacher. And I declared that I would go down and be in partnership with reopening a school. That's when I say that the journey started. And that the weekend of June 2nd was just a part in that journey.
Okay. So what was it about that beginning that ties into what occurred in Cherry Hill? Can you kind of connect that for us?
Well, first of all, I got what a declaration was. I actually declared something. In the International Black Summit, we have distinctions. And one of the distinctions that we work with, and kind of think of distinctions like tools. So one of the tools that we use is a distinction called declaration, where you declare something. You know, think of like the Declaration of Independence or a declarative statement is a statement where you say something versus ask the question. So I declared something. And when you declare something, you don't know how you're going to do it. All you know is that it will be done.
Okay.
And I just made that declaration that there was going to be a difference that I could cause in New Orleans. And the moment I made that declaration, I felt full of power. I felt full of a purpose. I felt full of a mission. There's something I'm about to cause to happen in the world that wasn't going to happen and before I said that declaration.
Okay. Okay, great. And so you declared that you were going to be a contribution in the city of New Orleans, and that was 2 years ago. Okay, two years ago, 2007. And so you were that. You went and you were a contribution, not only that summer in the Summit's event that they had, but you continued on after.
Yeah, right, because, I literally, our internet annual event for the International Black Summit really is covered in 4 days. But, like, what I took on was when the annual event stopped, I continued to stay in New Orleans for 3 months. I just rearranged my life so that I could remain in New Orleans. I didn't know where I was going to stay. I didn't know any of that. All I knew was what I had declared. That
okay.
I knew.
Okay. Okay. And so you went to New Orleans. You stayed for a while. You left. And, you know, bring us up to kind of, you know, maybe this year, earlier this year.
Okay.
And one of the other things everyone should know is that Chakaysha is, she also declared that she was going to live in different areas every quarter of the year, every 3 months of the year. And so part of this, you know, this journey to the hospital includes these other places that she lives. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's like, it's interesting. Once I made that declaration about New Orleans, I really saw how declarations start becoming a part of my life. It was like breathing. It was like brushing my teeth. You know, it became easier and easier to declare things. And my declarations actually gave me life. So after I did work in New Orleans, when I returned back to Los Angeles, I continued working. And one of the ways I did that was I did a radio show for a year around the school. So now I'm like making declarations. Like I said, it's a way to breathe now. And I started looking at my life. And I was like, what do I want to do with my life? You know, like if I'm declaring. And I saw how much I love to travel. So I then declared in 2009 that, like you said, instead of living in a house, I would live in the world. So I picked 4 places that I would live for 3 months at a time. One place was Belize, Central America, which I had never been to, but I just liked the way it sounded. You can scuba dive there, beautiful weather. So that was one of the locations. And because I was still doing work with New Orleans, I also said I would return back to New Orleans again for 3 months. And then my third location was Brazil. And then my fourth location was Ghana. And so in January of 2009, you know, even though I said it to my family, they didn't really, like, believe it. But when they saw me starting to, like, pack up things, give away things, you know, prepare myself for ready to leaving, they're like, where are you going? And I said, remember, this is the year I'm living in the world. So I in January, I went to Belize, Central America. Now, Belize, Central America actually came out of the declaration about New Orleans. I met a lady in New Orleans that was from Belize, and I just shared with her my desire to live in Belize. And she said, I'm from Belize. You can come and live with me. And so in January, she had been living in Buffalo, New York. She contacted me, and she said, I'm now in Belize. And so I just picked up everything and went to Belize for 3 months. And I stayed with her, the family, Cynthia Ellis. And it was a wonderful time. Then when those 3 months concluded, I returned to New Orleans. And so I was now in New Orleans, and it's June. And I realized we created a retreat that we were going to do in the week of June. So I, like, leave New Orleans to go to Cherry Hill, New Jersey, for basically 3 days. That was my intention.
But that was also by way of Washington, D.C.
Oh, right. Now, while I was in New Orleans, young people came to New Orleans. One particular young lady, her name is Paige, and Bonita Walker, that I know from the International Black Summit. I watched them grow up as teenagers. And they brought a group of 100 people from all over the United States to New Orleans to do service projects, to be contribution again. And while I was at that event, they told me about a workshop called The Flow, F-L-O-W. And it was going to be in Washington, D.C., just like a few days before the retreat. So I actually went and attended that. So for 4 days, I went to The Flow. When I completed that, then I continued on to Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Okay. Okay. And so now you're in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And that was on Monday, June 1st, when you arrived at Cherry Hill for a retreat. Okay. And the purpose of the retreat, well, not the purpose of the retreat, but the people who were involved in the retreat were the other hosts of this show, Clara Lyons Devon, Glenn Greenwich, and Henrietta Bird. And so as we, as Clara, I should say, prepared to receive us, because she's the actual host of the retreat, you know, it's in her city. As she prepared, we came in one by one, and Chakesha was the first person to arrive. And tell us about your arrival, Chakesha.
Well, you know, it's wonderful the way my life is. My life is beautiful. Everything that I want shows up. So the way I arrive in cities is that I usually arrive via airplane or train. And in this case, it was via train, and Clara was picking me up at the train station. So she picks me up in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and it's just beautiful. The Cherry Hill, New Jersey train station is small, but it's very pretty. Very much, it makes me think of, like New York. You know, the big Union Station. And so she picks me up in this at the station. And she's like, oh, Keisha, you know, what do you like to eat? You know, I bought this. Do you want to stop and get, you know, something to drink? And, you know, it's just a joy, you know, to travel and to have people care about what it is that you want. So we have a whole bunch of fun. She has this great dog named Duchess, and Duchess really likes me. So, you know, we've been driving around in the car with Duchess, and Cherry Hill, New Jersey is just beautiful. It's like 15 different shades of green. You think you see green, and then you see another green, and then another green. So, like, I get Kelly green now, and I get all these moss green, because it's just trees everywhere, and it's just so pretty. She's in this lovely neighborhood, beautiful home. And I walk in, and her husband, Edwin, is happy to see me, and he's like, you know, bringing in my luggage, you know. So here's these two people, just like whatever it is that I would like, they're a yes to it.
Okay, so look, this makes me want to go back.
I know, huh?
This makes me want to go back. Now, one of the communications that we sent out about the show talked about medicine and metaphysics. And so there are a couple of distinctions I'd like to put in during this conversation. One of them is in the metaphysical, in a portion of the metaphysical world, colors represent certain qualities. And so the color green, light green, represents strength, and patience is a part of strength. Dark green represents divine order. And so I just needed to, you know, put that in, because that's important as we continue the conversation. So you arrive on Monday, June 1st, and life is wonderful. Life is wonderful. You travel. You know, there was something in what you said about traveling, you know, to people, you know, traveling to have people enjoy your company, like to take, you know, just to enjoy your showing up, to be happy to see you. And you also made a statement that everything you want shows up. Everything you want shows up, okay? And so that's also key to this journey, this conversation that we're in right now. So that's Monday. And what's going on with the rest of the team on Monday is everybody's kind of preparing to get to the retreat. Now, Claire's there. Edwin is there. Chakasha's there. Chakasha's arrived. And so Glenn, who is the other person, other than myself, was also preparing to come, you know, to Cherry Hill. So, Glenn, can you tell us a little bit about your preparation on Monday to come and the activity that occurred for you?
Absolutely. So one of the things for me is that Monday morning, my sister had taken her two eldest children, my nephew Elijah and my niece Adina, to the doctor because they've been complaining of coughing and had the fever. And what I discovered was that what she discovered was that they had the swine flu. So the other thing was that my sister started getting the fever but hadn't started coughing yet. And so at that point in time, we quarantined the two oldest children, and when my sister started coughing, we also put her in quarantine as well. So what was left for me to do was to take care of my 83-year-old mother and my nephew and, of course, myself, and to be able to take care of the quarantined rest of the family members. So that was what I was faced with in terms of my trip to the retreat in Cherry Hill.
So on Monday, and you're planning to leave on Tuesday, you're faced with a challenge. I'll just call it a challenge. And it kind of turned things around for you. But you still were planning to come, right, until they found out that your sister also had it.
Correct. Later on that Monday night, about 5 in the afternoon, my sister discovered that she had it and needed to be quarantined as well. So at that point, it left me as the only person that really could provide for the care of my family. And at that point in time, I made a decision to stay home and support them in getting well.
Okay. And so is Clara online? Is she online?
Hold on, let me unmute her mic.
Okay. While we're waiting for Clara, I'm just trying to presence what each individual, you know, each individual was, you know, the characters, I'll say, in this story. It seems like, but believe me, this is a true story. This is a very true story. And so as we were planning from these four different cities to ascend upon Cherry Hill, it was as if all hell was breaking loose. And sometimes that's what has to happen. Hell has to break loose. Clara, are you on?
While we're waiting for Claire to come on, I just saw something that I thought I might just add in. You know, you were asking me if, you were asking me about the flow workshop.
About the one in Washington.
Right. I just went through my email, and this is what the flow welcome package says. Chakesha, congratulations, and welcome to the flow. Your decision to attend the flow is an expression of your commitment to explore new questions, experiences, and ways of thinking outside of the box to live the life you deserve now. I consider this to be an amazing step that you have taken to expand yourself, achieve your heart's desire. This journey will prove to be a remarkable and powerful one. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And so actually the weekend of May, say 28th, I think you left New Orleans, 28th, 29th, 30th, and 31st, you were in the flow. You had stepped into the flow, right. You had stepped into the flow. And, I mean, literally stepped into the flow of life. And you attended that workshop and had that experience and left there and came to Cherry Hill.
Right.
Okay?
Claire's on.
Claire?
Yes.
Hi. Can you just tell us what was going on in your world on Monday?
Wow. Well, what was going on in my world was excitement.
Uh-huh.
And I guess if you're looking at the first trimester of a pregnancy, it's just that excitement, the knowingness, you know, the team was getting together. We were going to be, you know, planning the what's next, the expansion of the International Black Summit talk show. I was just excited. I was excited just to see everybody, you know, that we were going to have this experience.
Okay. Okay, so we have excitement. You know, we have a person who's just in the Chakesha who's just joyous. You know, we have Glenn who's taking care of business. You know, he's just taking care of business, handling his family's well-being. And then on Tuesday, Henrietta leaves Chicago and comes to Cherry Hill. I don't know anything about what's going on. I'm just excited, you know, like Clara, excited and on my way, and everything works out. The plane leaves on time and lands early and, you know, and just having a wonderful time. You know, landed in Philadelphia. Clara picked me up. Chakesha was at the house resting, and we're getting ready. I'm expecting Glenn to come that night, that evening, and when I get in the car at the airport, Clara just mentions to me that Glenn might not be able to make it. And she, you know, goes into detail as why, as you just heard Glenn explain. And so there's a saying, or it might be a distinction in the summit, that we say there's no right way to be. And so the experience of Glenn, that Glenn was going through, that was evidently the right way for him to be. The fact that there were 3 out of 4 of us present, was it, that must have been the right way to be, because that's the way it was at the time. And so we continued to move on. And we started our retreat, and what we did was we conferenced Glenn in. And every time we went into a conversation or whatever, we simply called Glenn on the phone, checked to see if it was a good time for him to speak, and we went right on with our, you know, the beginning of the retreat. Right after dinner, we went back into a phone call, And one of the things that we didn't mention was that on Monday, somewhere on Monday, Chitosha mentioned about the flow that she was in and the workshop she had attended, and that it had awakened a lot of sleeping things that were inside of her, her body. And, you know, there's a term called chemicalization. When you drop a lot of new information, you know, it's like putting new wine into old wineskins, or like I like to use the example of, you know, when you mop a floor and there's a bucket of dirty water after a while, if you take that bucket and you put it under a faucet and you run the clean water, the clear water, clean, clear water in it, eventually all the dirt runs out. And that process of all the dirty water coming out is symbolic of what we call chemicalization. And so Chitosha started to feel what I'm saying was chemicalization. What it felt like to Chitosha, I'll let her explain to you. Chitosha?
Yeah.
And I'm talking about on Monday when you first mentioned to Clara how you were, how your body was feeling.
You know, a lot of things, like what's happening. Some things I remember, some things I don't. And
okay.
This is what I'm really loving about us doing this show today, because I'm, like, just getting this experience of that I have this beautiful, lovely necklace, and I went to take it out of the box, and some kind of way I snapped the string that's there, and all my beautiful beads just fell to the floor. And they're, like, all over the place. And, like, what we're doing together here is, like, restring the pearls back onto the necklace. So sometimes it's like I can't give you an answer. It's like the bead's hidden under the chair, and I don't see it yet. So
Got it. Right now,
yeah, you know, it's just, I don't know, you know.
Okay.
I'm sure, you know.
Okay. Okay, well, on Monday, because we can, you know, we can fill in those as long as, you know, it's okay with you. Chitosha, I'll let Clara do this part, because she mentioned something to Clara.
Cool. Yeah, so you're asking me what happened on Monday? Is that the question?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, basically, Chitosha wasn't feeling well, and for those of you who are listening in, you know, sometimes in the movie you tell the end and then you go back and recount the story.
Okay.
So I just want to acknowledge Chitosha for being here, because Chitosha was very ill and was hospitalized while you know, through the course of the last week, and we're at the point now as we just, you know, really want to acknowledge her and kind of share out the experience.
Yes.
What led up to one, her being hospitalized, and kind of this first part is really we're calling it before the hospital. Is, you know, just that of not feeling well. And when I saw her, you know, she came out in the wheelchair, and, you know, there was just some belaboring. And so I talk about this thing like, you know, this pregnancy. So, you know, there's a part of the pregnancy where you're, you know, you get the morning sickness, you know you're not feeling well, and you don't quite know, maybe at that point you don't know you're pregnant. But you're getting a lot of the symptoms, and Chitosha was demonstrating symptoms of being not quite well. And on last week's show, we were talking about when there are things going on in our life that we notice, you know, we constantly notice them. You know, we notice we don't feel well, or we notice that something is going on that we need to take care of, but we don't take action about it. And so what I said to Chitosha was, you know, if you're still not feeling well, you know, let's go to the doctor while you're here. And so she said, okay. And so I left her at the house while I went to the airport on Tuesday to pick up, uh, p- pick up Henrietta, but every time I checked in with Shakesha, I was like, how are you feeling? She's like, oh, not too good. So, you know, like those are the signs. And you know, I guess what there is to do is just to notice, you know, when we do that and to, you know, be a stand for ourselves to take action. Or if we notice that in someone that we know or someone that we love, you know, to like be a support for them to take action. And I think that was what unconsciously or subconsciously Shakesha had declared support, you know, support to do that. So Shakesha, like, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, Clara, because so there's a couple of things I want to say about that. So part of that is, like I said, way before the second week in June, things were happening. Just like I said, I think it started 2 years before. So other things were happening, and something that was happening physically to me was that I was put on blood pressure medication and diabetes medication. And I, you know, had an upset about that. I didn't want to do it. I wanted to lose weight instead of, you know, taking medication. But my success with losing the weight wasn't happening. And, you know, I started, like, I clearly started not taking my medication. You know, first it was very gradually. First it was, you know, I just missed this, you know, set of medication. But eventually it got to the point I wasn't taking the medication at all. And, of course, for me, I felt fine. I didn't, you know, I didn't feel anything. So now here it is, January of 2009, and it's been now many months that I haven't taken the medication. And I know that. I'm not telling anybody that. I think I can hide it. I was clear that I was hiding it. And nobody knew, and nobody would know until I told them. So what's real special about this is when I started feeling bad, when I said that to Claire, it was just a way of how she was being with me that kept me continuing to ask for support, continuing to open up about those things that I thought was secret, you know, that I started to confide in her and trust how much she loved me. All I was present to was her love. I wasn't like present to, oh, she's gonna tell me, you know, it's stupid that you haven't been taking your medication, you know, which is true. But I didn't have a sense of she's going to tell me all the things I should have been doing. All I was present to was just this love, just more love, more space for me to say things, other things that I was afraid of in the world that I thought I was keeping as a secret. So I just had this feeling of that I could just keep opening up. I could just keep being more vulnerable, you know, in this situation and start asking for help. Like I really got, I can ask for help. I don't have to be trying to do this by myself. I can, like, I have a friend named Manuel Sanders that I was roommates with for over 8 years. And he used to always say, Shakesha, do you have a team of people who are supporting you around your health? And I'd be like, this dude, what? He must be high. What is he talking about? But in this moment and sharing with Claire then, I had a team, that I could have a team of people to support me. And that's what I was getting present to as I was sharing with Claire that all she was going to do was support me, you know, just help me keep looking at ways to get help. So thank you for bringing that up, because I didn't, like, remember that like it's a very important element of what happened, because I'm clear if I hadn't have gone to the doctor that night, you know, like, it would have been, like, just wouldn't have been good news at all. So this was my first moment of doing another distinction that we call self-generating, where I now started to ask for help.
Mm-hmm. And you brought up another really, really good point, Shakesha, in terms of the space Summit is, that the Summit family is. The Summit space is a space where, you know, people can bring themselves fully and not be judged, and that it's a space where people can open up and express themselves and find what that request is that they need to make to self-generate, you know, who they're going to be moving forward. You know, the Summit as a body represents that space. And it was just, you know, it was demonstrated in this instance. And it's interesting, too, you know, that you trusted the Summit space, your Summit family versus, you know, your biological family.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Right. So it's a really, you know, people talk about the specialness of, you know, being in the Summit conversation, being in the Summit family. And I think what it represents and how people showed up inside of the Summit family in this particular instance where, you know, it really literally was a matter of life or death, is really powerful. And to have that experience is really very special.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, that's key because the Summit provides, the International Black Summit provides a space for authenticity. And that's something, and I mean, it's almost to the degree that you have to be authentic in your speaking, because it's like if you're not you, it's not that anybody else is going to say anything, it's that you're going to make the correction or you're going to make the adjustment in what you say. It provides such a safe, comfortable space for you just to put it out there. You know, just, you know, it's like they used to say back in the day, just go lay on the altar. You know, just take your burdens to the Lord and leave them there. It's kind of, you know, kind of reminds me of that sometimes, that when you know, it's like when there's something on you, you have to put it in the space. And the moment you put it in the space of the Summit, shift occurs. And it opens up. It just opens up the doors of life for you, so that you can experience what it is that you really want to experience. And in this particular case, it was well-being. It was perfect health in Chakesha's body. And so as that was occurring in the home of Clara and Ed Devon, and that was also occurring in New York in Glen Grinnell home. You know, it was kind of like simultaneously this thing about well-being was going on, and the retreat was still in session. The retreat was still in session. I mean, in full session. And we have two pages of things that we have to handle. And as we went down that list, or we started the list, Chakesha in a conversation with, you know, Glenn on the phone, Chakesha mentions to Glenn how she's feeling. And Glenn became a stand for her to do something about it. And he just asked the question, so are you going to see about that? I think is the way you asked the question. Glenn, correct me if needed. You know, what are you going to do about it, or how are you going to handle it?
Yeah. It was pretty much, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to see a doctor tonight, or, you know, like that?
Right. Okay. And so, see, when somebody in the Summit asks you something like that, there ain't no BSing allowed. Okay. It's like that. You know, he asked, "What's she going to handle it? Are you going to handle it?" But the unarticulated is, handle it, okay? It's kind of like that, you know. And so Clara and I, we were cleaning the kitchen from dinner, and we hear Chakesha say, yes, Clara and Henrietta are going to take me to the hospital tonight, which we knew nothing about, okay? We just turned and looked, and that's when Clara explained to me, well, you know, she hasn't been feeling well. And, I told her if she continued so-and-so, we would go see a doctor. So I said, okay. And it was like automatic. We just went into go to the hospital mode, okay? And so we finished what we were doing, and we got ready, and we took a trip, a journey, a drive to the actual hospital. And
I wanted to say something here, Henrietta.
Okay, great.
Okay. This is, it was really interesting the minute we got in the Clara's car. Now, Henrietta is the kind of person, Henrietta is very, she's like full of joy. She's always checking in with people. But I wouldn't say she's like an intrusive person. But when we got in the car, she immediately started asking me all these questions and telling me to do stuff. Like she would say, okay, Chakesha, repeat after me, I love myself and I forgive myself. And I'm like 5% of me is conscious. And I'm like going, why is she having me do this? But 95% of me is unconscious that I just go into action. It's almost like it's a knee-jerk reaction. Whatever she's asking me to do, I'm doing it. And she even says, okay, who else is it that you've not been willing to forgive? And she's just like all the way to the hospital, she's just like at me. And see, what you got to know, I would even say she's just badgering me. Okay? I had the sense of being badgered. And what you want to know is like 2 weeks before, Henrietta and I actually got into it about me asking her something, and she actually said I was badgering her. And, you know, we were on our radio, our talk show Thursday morning meeting, and she was like, she's just been badgering me, and she was just going on. And Claire's on the team call with us. So all of a sudden, Clara just kind of stops us, and she says, well, let's just kind of look at Badger. And she asked us to actually take it on like a duel, like perhaps this is a distinction. Maybe badgering is occurring, but maybe it's not education like badgering. Maybe it's a distinction. Maybe there's something that education is pointing to. And the only thing I remember at that moment was I was pointing something, and it was like I was a demand of Henrietta to show me what her leadership was. Like I knew she was a leader. It was almost like I was a demand for her to participate in her leadership. And I was really saying, yeah, because like I was like, if I fell off a mountain or I was climbing a mountain with you, like would you save my life? Like, could I count on you like that? Literally, I was 2 weeks ahead of time asking her to be the leader that she is because I would need that 2 weeks later for my life to be saved. Now, I didn't get that when I was doing that. But that's what happened. And one of the other things, Henrietta had always told me she was a minister, but she never told me what she did. And I never asked her. I mean, it would just come up, but I never got any details. But later on, as I was experiencing all of this, Claire starts explaining to me, and Henrietta explains to us that she actually ministers to people who are going through their transition in life, people who are actually dying. Like, she's one of the people who will go and be with them and have them experience the fullness of that. And that's when Henrietta said to me later on that when she looked at me when I got in the van, when I got in the car, that she said I was in transition mode. She said I was leaving. And I, you know, so it's like even though we're doing a review of this, there's something about it was already done. Like abundance, like prosperity, like your health, it's already there. It's already done. All it is to claim it. So this experience that I was going through in the car was very interesting because she was like inside of her leadership. She was total leadership because whatever she said, I was following it. I wasn't questioning her. I was just doing what she was asking of me, like because I was clear. She's taking care of me. I need to step where she tells me to step. I need to move where she tells me to move. So I wanted to bring that up, that you actually was demonstrating the leadership, and that's what I was experiencing in the car. She was like, I don't care if you like it or don't like it. There's something I see here that, you know, I want to attend to, you know, and it was beautiful. The experience of it, Henrietta, was like beautiful. It was it's very much to me like when a mother's taking care of a child, when they know, you know, that, you know, just follow the direction of mother, that she's leading you to safety, she's taking care of you, and all of your needs will be met.
Wow,
that's really something. Well, let me just take a moment to say that this is the International Black Summit talk show. And this program is called Let's Celebrate, and we're celebrating the host of this show, Chakaysha Showers, tonight in her experience into the hospital, her stay at the hospital, and her coming out of the hospital. We are at the point where we're almost there. We haven't made it to the hospital, but it was such a dynamic, you know, it was so dynamic. We just wanted to share it, you know, with our summer family and others who will listen to this at another time. We're on with Gwen Greenwich, who has Man of the Month. We're on with Claire Lyons Devon, who is Vision Works on the third Sunday. I have the program On Track on the first Sunday. And once again, this is, we're celebrating the host of Let's Celebrate, Chakaysha Showers. Okay.
We've got 32 minutes, and we've got somebody that's got their hand up.
Okay, great. So let's take a question, and then we'll get to the hospital.
I have a question.
847-336, go ahead.
Okay, I'm a friend of Henrietta's, and I just want to ask you, did her voice change? Because I had an experience with her with that, and I called, and she just told me, okay, Brenda, what do you want to do as far as your transition service? It was none of her, oh, well, you know, and she just came out with her voice changed. When I hung up the phone, I did what I had to do. So when she told me about that experience that she had with you, I asked her, did your voice change, Henrietta? Because her voice changes.
I
don't think so. You know, I didn't have any, like, distinct that it was higher or lower.
I mean,
you know,
maybe not higher or lower. It's just the intensity of it.
Right, yeah.
Just
no,
like,
I get what you mean. Yeah, she was very clear. There was no indecisiveness.
Yes or no answer.
Yeah.
I ain't got time to play no games. This is what it is, and this is what I'm saying.
Right. No, you're right. Absolutely. There was certainty. There was clarity. There was directionality, and it was a progress. I was in action.
Okay.
No wasted motion for energy. It was like, We're going somewhere. We're getting something done.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is Clara. I would say definitely her voice changed. Yes, most definitely. And Chakaysha is very accurate in terms of her assessment. As soon as we got in the car, Henrietta was on her. And, you know, like in the car, so who I know Henrietta and Shakaysha to be are talkers. You know, they talk incessantly, nonstop. And so when we initially started, you know, I'm thinking, okay, she's not feeling well, let's just leave her alone. But it wasn't talking conversation. As Shakaysha was saying, it was very directed. She was like, she was starting, I would call it like the spiritual healing, like clearing the space of what's going on in the heart, you know, like opening that space up and clearing that space of what was going on in the heart, you know, because a lot of times it's things that's going on in the heart that cause our dis-ease or, you know, our dissatisfaction, and that shows up in our body, you know, in various ways. So for me, it was like she was clearing that space. When we were sitting in the emergency room, you know, waiting to be seen, you know, the questions, the clearing, you know, the allowing of expression of Shakaysha. And yes, it was very, very directed, very, very to the point and very insistent, you know, like we're going to go through these spaces and there's an opportunity to acknowledge all that's, you know, great and wonderful and beautiful about life. And there's also an opportunity to, you know, to forgive yourself for not thinking it, that it's all wonderful and beautiful and, you know, like to get how gracious and how beautiful life is. So it was a very, it was a perfect time. Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Glenn, I just wanted to add intentionality. So Henrietta was being very intentional in her line of questions to Shakaysha to find out what Shakaysha's intention was going to be going into the hospital. So there was a couple levels of intentionality that were taking place, and who Henrietta was being, you know, maybe her voice did change, but clearly who and her energy and her space had changed and gotten intentional.
Mm-hmm.
27 minutes left. Would you like me to extend the show?
Yeah, I think so. So we can finish it. Yeah, so we can complete it. Thank you, Glenn.
You're welcome.
Okay, Brenda, thank you for calling me in. Did you have any other questions?
No, I'm just listening. I just feel the chill, but I know your voice.
Mm-hmm.
I told you when we
had experience. That tells me.
And I hummed the phone with you. Your voice just changed. I said, "Oh God, okay." It's just like this is direct. I'm not gonna pat you on your back. This is direct answer. What you want to do? What you want me to say? So it was just, and I knew when you was talking to your friend, your voice had to change.
Mm. And can you share a little bit with what were you going through that was having you?
I was going through a thing with my kids, and I have a disease, and it was about affecting me physically. And forgiving myself for the things that they were saying that I had done and stuff like that. And I was just like, I had got to my last rope. And the doctor was saying, okay, well, if you don't get the stress under control, you can have a stroke. The medicine that you own is not going to, I had to go on medication, and it's not going to work because of the stress in your life. And so, again, my kids had called me with the same stuff that they was taking me through, and I had called Henrietta that day. And so all the days she would say, well, Brenda, you know you's a good mama, you know, blah, say Skippy too, and they always being this and they always being that. But she just came, well, so what you want me to say at your transition service? Her voice just like, what do you want me to say at your transition service? Just tell me. And I'm like, I don't want to die. And from that point on, I just start letting it go, little by little. It was
it was something that made me inside of me. I don't want to have a transitional service right now. It's not my time for a transitional service. So it was, I guess her voice just made me okay. It just changed, and it touched something in me.
Yeah, I kind of hear. Not only was it I don't want to die, but you know I kind of hear, even though you didn't say it, and you know I could be wrong, but I could hear I'm going to live.
Yeah.
Like your action was, I'm stepping into living.
I'm stepping into living. That's this. And so when I hung up the phone, and I took another direction with what my kids was bringing to me. And so it's from that point on, it was just like, okay, it has nothing to do with you, with me. Everybody has to go through their own thing. And I just, those words, I forget myself, I love myself. I just keep saying that when they bring it to me, I love myself, I forget myself. I love myself, I forget myself. And I even hear my voice change. Because the stronger it is, the more I can push them away from me, and my health is getting much better.
And that was one of the things that I was experiencing. Once the time I was, now I know I'm maybe moving a little ahead, but during the stay in the hospital, anytime I would start wavering and getting nervous and anxious, they had written that phrase up on the board in the room, and I would just say that, and it would just start empowering me. I would get centered. I get clarity. I get, like you were saying, I knew what I was going to do, you know. So it was almost like a salve, or like a smelling salt. When I would say those, I forgive myself, I love myself, I forgive myself, it was like smelling salt, you know. I just become more conscious.
Right.
Well, we have another person, Gwen, who wants to speak. She just happens to be sitting next to me, so you won't see her hand. And Shakesha's the host.
Hi, Shakesha. Congratulations on being able to draw the people that you need to travel your journey with you.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Wow, that just filled my heart. Thank you.
I was thinking about this changing of the voice, and to me, it's a bit of a crossover. It's a point where you're very in tune with what the spirit wants to say through you, and that's why it doesn't. You don't identify it as that personality, because that personality has been pushed aside in order for the spirit to come forth and say those words to you that you need to hear. And not just in that specific incident, but I found when I first recognized a change in my voice, it was through music. I have a passion for music, and I was asked to audition for a group several years ago. And I took on the task, and when I sang the song that I had selected, it was as if I was outside of myself and not being able to identify that it was my voice. And I did... I was selected for the group, but I knew that it wasn't me singing that song at that audition, because it filled me and it seemed to fill the room. So I really think that it's a crossover, it's a crossing over into this, just touching the spiritual world. Thank you so much for taking my call. God bless you.
Thank you. Wow, crossing over.
Yeah, isn't that something?
That's a powerful word, yes. A
that's
crossing
something
over.
And what's your name?
Sheila.
Okay.
So that's Sheila. So again, this is the International Black Summit Talk Show, and this is Let's Celebrate with Jakaysha Showers, and we're honoring and celebrating Jakaysha, the host of this show tonight. We're on with Glenn Greenidge, who has the Fourth Sunday Man of the Month, and he also has a Wealth Club on Tuesday, on the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month. We're on with Claire Lyons Devon, who has the third Sunday of every month, Vision Works, and myself, Henrietta Bird, has the first Sunday of every month on track. And so let's get back to the hospital. So we're in the hospital, and we've done all of this work that you've heard about. We've done forgiveness work. We've done clearing work. When I say we, I'm talking about Jakaysha, Clara, and myself, Henrietta. And everything that Spirit said to us to do to prepare for Jakaysha's entry into the hospital, the place where she is going to be, she's going to experience rest, she's going to experience repair, you know, by the dictionary definition, and a lot of other things. And so we're in the waiting room, and one of the agenda items for us on the retreat was to go to a Qigong class with Clara. Clara takes Qigong, and that was one of the things. And so when they finally, you know how you wait in the emergency room, when they finally gave Jakaysha a bed, she was able to rest. And Jakaysha mentioned three things, okay? She mentioned that she was experiencing, and what her secret was about the high blood pressure. It was about the diabetes. And there was one other thing that Jakaysha was, that she had as a secret. And so when she, you know how they check you in and they ask you, do you have any any other conditions? And something said, Henrietta, you know, go with her, because she told Glenn that she wanted Clara and I to hold her hands through this before we left the house. That's what she said. I mean, like, I want you to hold my hands through this. And so I got up and I said, well, maybe I should go in with her. And that's when I found out about these three conditions that her body was experiencing, because clearly Jakaysha was not experiencing those, but her body was experiencing the diabetes, the high blood pressure, and one other condition. And remember, Jakaysha mentioned something about breath. You know, she says, like, declaration gives you breath, you know. And the third thing that she was experiencing, her body was experiencing, was what the medical field calls sleep apnea. And I found this out when she's telling it, you know, she's giving the information to the nurse, and which made, all of a sudden, everything made sense, because when we were in New Orleans and we were doing the service project, I can remember stacking we were sleeping on these, what do you call those beds that blow up? The air mattresses. Right, and I can remember stacking two or three air mattresses up for Jakaysha, thinking it was hard for her to get down low on the ground, but the reason was because of her breathing. And it just flashed in my mind, and I said, that's what that was. Okay, so, you know, so let me fast forward back to the room when we were in the emergency room. So Claire gets up and she said, well, Henrietta, I can show you the moves. And I had no idea what Qigong was, not a clue. I just knew it was a martial art, but I didn't know what it did. And what
what it does is it moves energy. You know, you take energy from the earth, and correct me, and you push the energy down into your being, your body, and you move it. You know, you can move it around the room. You can just move it through your body, all of these things. So Claire was teaching me these Qigong moves in the room. Now, Takesha was very restless, and she couldn't relax, because I can remember I kept saying to her, relax, Takesha, just relax. She would nod, and then she would jump, and she would nod, and she would jump, which are symptoms of the sleep apnea and a couple of other things. But so Claire adjusted the bed so that she could almost sit up straight, you know how hospital beds are, and relax her neck and her head so she could go on and go to sleep. So finally we moved the energy around the room. We kept telling Takesha to relax, and Takesha went to sleep. Okay? Claire, is there anything else in that piece that you want to put in there?
No. Actually, there is. There was a point where the physician's assistant came in, and she was making requests of Takesha. Takesha was kind of responding, but she was actually still asleep, so it's almost like sleepwalking. And I guess there's this phase, like, you know, after we take action, we're doing the sleepwalking thing. We're doing the motions, but we're really not totally conscious of what we're doing. You know, we're following the instructions, but we're not totally conscious of what we're doing. You know, we're participating in the action, but we're not totally conscious in what we're doing. And that's the state that I would say Takesha was in. The other thing I wanted to add is Qigong is a healing energy. And at the time when it was allowed to be practiced in China, it's actually banned there now. They had hospitals, and that all they practiced was Qigong. And it the Qi is the energy or the life force energy, and the ability to move it or clear blocks of energy. I guess it would be similar to, a Reiki movement or the other things, but it really is about moving the chi or the energy in the body, around the body, and focusing it for healing purposes versus combative purposes. So, yeah, that's it.
And I just wanted to add, now I'm not in a hospital room yet. I'm still like in the emergency room.
Right.
So when she's saying bed, you know, the beds they make you get in when you're sitting there waiting for the doctor. So I'm not like in a bed yet. You know, like we're just in waiting. I still haven't seen anyone. I was, you know, just back in the emergency part. We were no longer in the waiting room. Now we're actually in the room where you wait to see the doctor.
Right, the examination room.
Yeah.
Chris was laughing at us. You're in here doing yoga.
Right. You kept laughing.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he kept coming in, and so they're doing their thing, you know, they're doing the medical thing, and let me just say, this hospital was wonderful. It allowed a space for you to do whatever it was you needed to do. They were kind, they were gentle, it was clean, it was just a wonderful, wonderful space. And everything, you know, everything that we were able to do, we were allowed to do with no question, you know, just no question. So Takesha, she rested, and she finally went to sleep. And we were very, you know, I remember thinking, oh, God, she's asleep. I'm, you know, she's resting. And I was so happy about that, you know. And so I think they did a couple of tests, whatever, because, you know, when she went in the hospital, she had two complaints about how her body was feeling. And they were dealing with those two things. And, you know, one was her breath, and the other one was just the pain that she was having. And so they were looking, you know, they were looking at all that. They were, and by the way, her vital signs were perfect. They were perfect. There was she, her blood pressure was normal. Everything was normal, you know. And so she finally goes to sleep. They do a few little tests, and then I doze off, and Claire wakes me up, and it was 4 o'clock, like 10 minutes to 4. And she says, well, we can go because they can't do anything until, I guess, the technicians come in because whatever test they were going to run, they can't do it until in the morning. And so then we left, and we went home, and we went to sleep. And it was, I guess, a little, you know, maybe 4:30 a.m. when we got home. About 8 o'clock, and Claire, do you, let me know if you, you know, if there's anything you want to put in here. About 8 o'clock, the phone rings, and Claire's phone rings, and it's the hospital telling Claire that they couldn't wake Takesha up. They couldn't wake her up. And so when I got up, you know, maybe an hour or so later, and Claire told me, and we were on the phone with Glenn, and we were like, what time are we going to the hospital? And, you know, Claire just happened to mention, you know, where the hospital called and said they couldn't wake her up. And I said, they couldn't wake her up, you know. And so, of course, you know, now we have to, I had to ground myself because I'm like, what do you mean? You know, what does that mean? And so we had to go back to the hospital to find out what that meant. And
actually, there's another thing. When they called the first time, it was to give the results of the stomach test, because that's initially what she was complaining about. And then when I called back, they said they had moved her to ICU, and I was like, what? Yeah. Oh, the first time when the doctor called, he just said that they were going to admit her. You know, he didn't say, you know, she's going to ICU. And he said, I'll call you back. And I said, okay. And so when he didn't call me back within an hour, I said, well, let me call them back. Mm-hmm. You know, and I called back, and he says, and the person says, oh, she's in ICU. And I was like, oh, that's not good. So, you know, we had a different plan of action at that point.
Right, right. And so so we go back to the hospital and go to ICU, and Takesha's hooked up to every possible machine and tube there is, okay? Let me just say that. You know, every tube, every, you know, and she's on a ventilator. And they explained to us that the reason she's on the ventilator was because her it was difficult for her to breathe, and you know that was one of the symptoms, that she had this shortness of breath, and that her carbon dioxide levels were like 120, and they should have been around 20, and so that, you know, that was the reason that, you know, the ventilator made it easier for her. Her lungs didn't have to work so hard. The ventilator would do it for her. And not only that, they had given her a sedative that put her in an even deeper sleep because of the ventilator. And they said it's, you know, because of the discomfort of it, that you have to be sedated And so that's the medical. You know, that was medically what was going on. When we looked at this situation metaphysically, and when I say metaphysically, I mean beyond the physical appearance, you know, God always gives us clues. The universe, spirit always gives us clues as to what's going on. And one of the things that Chikesha mentioned, she mentioned three things: blood pressure, diabetes, and sleep apnea. Sleep apnea deals with breath, you know, with you breathing in life and letting go of everything that blocks you from living, okay? When you look at it metaphysically, blood pressure is joy. You know, there have been studies shown that people with high blood pressure, a lot of the joy has gone out of their life. And the diabetes, it's said that the sweetness of life, you know, has left. So when you look at it, as Chikesha was going through her journey to do and to live this particular life, there were things that had taken up residence, I'll say, that she needed to get rid of. And anything that blocked her joy, anything that blocked her, the sweetness, anything that kept her from breathing in life, it had to go. It had to be released in order for her to experience the what she declared in New Orleans, and really what she declared when she said, I'm going to live wherever I'm, you know, I'm going to live in the world. Every 3 months I'm going to live in these different places. So, you know, hindsight, I can look at it and I can say, you know, these are the things that had to be adjusted. Okay, just had to be adjusted so that she could take on life fully. And when she went into the hospital or the place to allow herself to rest, she went into this deep sleep. And did someone say something?
Yeah, I was just having a thought.
Okay.
This is
Clara. Uh-huh.
Yeah. One of the things too, I'm just like drawing some analogies. The nurse was saying that, you know, once, you know, you come out of the type of sedation that they put you in, they said, well, one, she's going to sleep for, you know, we need her to sleep at least for a couple of days, so that, you know, we can bring her carbon dioxide levels back to normal. But the other thing is, when you come out of that type of sedation, she said she's not going to remember any of this. And it's interesting how in life, you know, when we're going through something that's traumatic, our state of consciousness is that of being in a deep sleep or that of being in, you know, a coma, or the whole point of, you know, the lack of acknowledgement of something, you know, you're turned off to it. You don't remember it. You don't remember, you know, the why of it. And one of the things I was sharing with Chikesha, after she came out of the hospital, because she didn't miss a beat, she went back to living life like, you know, nothing had happened, you know, like the whole Chikesha that I knew before the hospital and after the hospital were just like in movement, you know, moving forward, no, you know, woe was me, I've been sick kind of thing. It was like stepping into living life fully. But it's really interesting how, you know, when God shuts you down to rest you, you know, to do the repair, to do the rejuvenation, to do the transformation, that there's this period of going into, you know, going into to the womb, being totally covered over, being totally at peace in a sense, you know, or that stillness, that quietness. And, you know, for Chikesha to be shut down, to be in quietness, that space, you know, was really, really, you know, that was interesting to me to see that. And I get that one of the stages of transformation is going into the womb, you know, like with the butterflies. They cocoon themselves over, you know, there's stillness, there's quietness, there's darkness, but all this stuff is going on inside. But to the exterior, there's a shutdown. There has to be the shutdown in order to you know, evolve into the next state. And so that was just a really, really interesting interesting pace. And I was also looking at Glenn's situation as well, because the whole quarantine thing, you know, the family was shut off. You know, everybody got shut down, shut off, you know, contained. So, you know, before that they could evolve, you know, or transition into the next state. So there's something about that cocooning. I'm going to call it cocooning for lack of a better word. And then last week's show we were talking about the badger, and one of the things that we distinguished about the badger is that they burrow down into holes, you know. You know, they dig deep in the ground and they hide. Well, we called it hiding. But they enjoy being, you know, in the ground deep in the hole. You know, that's where they live and create all their little compartments in life, and they come out, you know, to do whatever they do. But yeah, there's something really cool about when you're getting ready to make a major transition, God shuts you down. You know, life shuts you down. Everything has to stop and be still before you can transition to the next state.
Yeah, that's real. That's really something. You know, that's really something. Because I really...
Henrietta, we've got 28 minutes left, and you've got a caller, 323-944 with their hand up. Would you like to listen, hear from them now?
Yes. Yes. Now it's fine.
Okay. Go ahead, caller, 323-944. You're on the air.
Hi, Takesha. This is Andreen. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Andreen?
I'm good.
Doing great now.
What I'm hearing, though, I've known you a long time since, what was that your first summit that was in Oakland? Or was that your
second? Yes, yes, my first.
Okay. I remember Takesha at her first summit in Oakland, California. And I know how much she loved that space of being right then and there. So then it was over, she was up on the stage. I think there's a video of Takesha up on the stage dancing from the first summit. And from that point on, she actually took on the International Black Summit Declaration with her life. I've known her a long time through a lot of different things, and she's always been a stand Black Summit Declaration. And what's happened here, I can really see where you've been committed, and one of the words that Glenn used was intentional. And I just know that you're consciously, you have a conscious intention towards living your life and actually manifesting the summit declaration. So when you became, you know, ill, or when it, you know, when your time came for you to go on autopilot, I think that's, you know, it was all set up, you know, out of that declaration and something you've been working on all these years. Because really what stood out for me was that, you know, that we assert that we are responsible for generating community as a possibility and distinction, and that's exactly what you did. You generated a community all the time. I've always known you. You've always generated community as a possibility and distinction. Even in this particular time, it's just, it's amazing. Actually, I guess it's not amazing. It's par for the course for someone who lived their life with that type of intention. So I just want to congratulate you, and I know that everything is just as it should be, and
yes,
something
yes.
huge, you know, for everybody, you know. It's, like I said, it really points to, for me, the Black Summit and who you've been all these years.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
In listening to what you just said, there were some things, so like a lot of these things that are being said now, a lot of it I wasn't aware of. Like, so I didn't know I went to sleep without, you know, talking. I didn't know I didn't wake up. And, you know, my daughter, in fact, has said that this whole thing about sleep, she kept saying you weren't asleep. My daughter said she was in a coma. You know, you it just like, you know, just popped it. Because she was saying if you sleep, you wake up. But the thing I noticed, there's a part of this that was happening. There was things going on while I was asleep that was going on in my mind. And some of those things were things like I kept the hospital I was at is a unique hospital. It's a teaching hospital. So they're like really creating another way to do medicine. And one of the things I was very aware of was all of the technology they had. And for me, as I was sleeping, I was present to a lot of action happening. And one of the things was the technology that literally it was as if the hospital had plugged into my mind. So whatever I was thinking would show up on this big, like, 32-inch screen. Whatever I was thinking, you know, and one of the things that I was thinking was like what my life was. And what I kept seeing on the screen was a battlefield. I was seeing that I was engaged in battle. And, you know, I've shared this with Claire, that it was a battle scene somewhere during the Revolutionary War. It wasn't like World War I, World War II, because I could see the uniforms. I could see the way people were bandaged up. But I was fighting. I was like, it was this continuous battle. And what I could hear, and I don't know who was saying it, but I could hear people saying, well, my God, is that what her life looks like? Is that what her life was like? And they kept asking me to go to sleep. They were like, go. It was as if they were saying to me, go back into the deep sleep and now, like, record. Because I think something about the medication they gave me made me forget things, like I couldn't remember things. So it's almost as if they were saying, okay, we've completed a certain stage. Now we need you to return back to sleep and, like, fill back in all the details again of your life or something like that. But they kept asking me to go to sleep, and they had, it seemed to me, they had like a camera that was watching me, and it was certain things I would do inside of technology with the cameras, with the video screen. They could tell when I wasn't asleep. I might look like I was asleep, but I wasn't like in what they call that deep REM. And it would just say, she's not asleep. So the process of what the additional healing needed to be would stop. And not only that, so like there was the hospital staff, so I could see the nurses, I could see the doctors. But when I would go into the sleep, it was some other something there. I never saw the faces, but I could presence it in numbers. It was almost like it was 12 of them. And what they would do to see if I was asleep is if I was dreaming a dream, somebody would crumble paper. And if I'd like made any notion to that I heard the paper crumble, it was as if they would say, process stop. Process is stopped. And that process, when they would say would stop, I had a sense that something negative was happening. Like, you know, I had a sense of, oh, my goodness, you know, I should have been staying asleep. Okay, or once again, I try to go back to sleep again, and I would feel like I was dreaming, and then people would start shouting, and if I paid attention to the shouting, once again, it would be like, it was very like a Star Trek. I could hear like a PA system closing down. So it was, there for me, there was someone else there other than doctors, and there was other kind of healing going on than most what we call traditional healing. I was very clear, very present to that. And I finally, on my last day of like being asleep all the time, I finally did go into that sleep. And what the picture was a picture of a family picnic, a Sunday, like a barbecue at the house where you got homemade ice cream, everybody's cooked everything, kids are in the backyard playing, old people are on the porch, everything's beautiful. And so now that's my dream, that's the scene I can see. Then I hear then there's rattle of paper, but I don't hear the rattle of the paper. I continue in my dream. TVs go up, but I don't hear the TVs. All that keeps present is the dream, which it was like, then, once again, now the voices are saying, continue process, continue process. So it was a lot of other things going on, and it was a nurse that I engaged in a conversation with, and I found out she was from another country, in which she was just speaking to me. And one of the things I kept wishing, I never said it to her, was that I was wishing that she practiced the medicine of her people, you know, like people who give herbs, people who read bones, people who, all that kind of medicine, that type of medicine. I was saying, I hope she didn't never learn that. I hope that's still available to her, because that's what's going to bring me through this. That's what's going to bring me to the other side, is that medicine. And there was even a lady who was cleaning. She was a custodian. She was cleaning my room. But she wasn't, to me, she wasn't cleaning my room like of dirt. She was like saging my room. She was like, the duster was more like a traditional ceremonial feather, and she was like proclaiming that stuff and doing it. It was all those kinds of things I was very conscious of in my sleep. And it was all about me and this team again. It was a group of people that was working with me. And I just remember that very vividly, very vividly.
Okay. So, Keisha, let me bring in what was actually happening in the room while you were going, you know, at the times, you know, during the times you just mentioned. And for the moment, this is International Black Summit Talk Radio. We're doing Let's Celebrate, and our celebration is for the host, Chakaysha Showers. You're on with Glenn Greenwich from Man of the Month and Wealth Club, Claire Lyons Devon, who does our third week of the month with Vision Works, and Henrietta Bird on the first Sunday of the month with On Track. We invite you to join us at the International Black Summit event, which is being held in London, England this year. The first weekend, which actually starts July 30th, the first weekend in August, and goes through the first weekend in August. Please go to our website, blacksummit.org, and get all of the information that you need for the summit event in London, England. We're celebrating Chakaysha tonight in three parts, and we're actually on the third part of it now. The first part of the show talked about her journey into the hospital, and that journey consisted of her declarations to live and her how she was going to live. She kind of laid out for herself what she was going to do. She was going to live in different parts of the world every 3 months, and actually started out doing that. She went to a workshop, which was called In the Flow, and actually got in the flow and released a lot of things. And that release took her from Washington, D.C. to New Jersey, where she relaxed and had lots of peace and love and was surrounded by even the dog loved her and was able to relax enough to be in a conversation with one of her colleagues, Glenn Greenwich, and authentically speak that she really needed to go to the hospital. And she was taken to the hospital by Clara and Henrietta, myself, and on the way to the hospital, she did some forgiveness work, and she did some clearing in the emergency room, and she did preparation. That's what I'm calling it. She prepared herself to go in the hospital to get what she needed so that she could come out. While in the hospital, she went into a deep sleep and slept for 3 days. She slept from Wednesday morning, actually. It was Wednesday morning, I'm guessing about 2:33 o'clock, and she did not awaken until Friday evening after 6 p.m. Now, the reason that is so important is because the medical process when you're on a ventilator is if the person that you're on the ventilator because your lungs are not strong enough, and, you know, one of her symptoms was shortness of breath. And the doctors and the nurses, every day around 5 a.m., they would wake her up. You know, they turned down the sedation so that she could wake up on her own. And they had these tests that you took. If she could breathe on her own for a certain amount of time, then they would take a blood test. If there was enough oxygen in her blood, then they would talk to the doctor and see if the doctor would be willing to take her off the ventilator machine. And every day they'd done this test, and she could never breathe on her own for longer than 2 minutes. There was, you know how they have all the numbers and the machines and everything. And the numbers, as far as her breathing was concerned, were not to go over 40. If it went into the 40s, they'd have to turn the machine back on. So every day, they would turn down the sedation, let her wake up, come out of this sleep that they had put her in, and see if she could breathe, turn down the ventilator, see if she could breathe on her own. And if she couldn't, they turn the ventilator right back on. And that's what they had been doing every day because she could not breathe on her own. Now, meanwhile, what's going on in the summit body is communication, prayer. People are taking a stand. People are praying. And, you know, the International Black Summit is just what it says. It is people of African descent internationally. So everybody was praying in their own way, their own religion, their own practices. And everybody, the emails were going. And it's interesting that Shakesha talked about the technology because the emails were out. And all over the world, literally, people were praying and chanting for Shakesha to return. Now, Shakesha's intention was to return, okay? When she went in that hospital, I asked her point blank, are you going in to stay? You know, the hospital provides a lot. Are you going in to get what you need and come out? And she said, I'm going in to get what I need and come out. So that was her intention, and now everybody in the summit body has joined in to her intention. Her son, Amafika, came on Thursday, all right, and by this time she had been asleep for 48 hours. And you talk about a man praying for his mama, okay? He prayed for his mother, and Clara and I stood with him. There were three of us. And for those of you who do numbers or you know, you believe in the Trinity or whatever, there was somebody on her left, somebody on her right, and someone at her feet at all times. Feet represent understanding. The left side, you know, is your logical side, and the right side is your creative side. And you know Shakesha is all of that. She's all of that. So there was always someone standing there in those positions, those three positions. We would rotate from time to time. The interesting thing was when we came on Thursday, they said they, you know, they tried to wake her up, but, you know, she didn't make it through that first test. So they said, you know, maybe, you know, it would be easier if her family was there. Spirit always gives you clues as to what you need to do. Family was the clue that Spirit gave. Well, Amasika had to go back to New York, and he came back the next day. And so they said they would wait until we arrived to awaken her. Now, our goal was to have Chakasha come back fully, to come back fully. And so what Spirit led us to do was to send an email out, send another communication out, and ask the summit body to speak her name, to speak her name between 3:30 and 5:30 Eastern time. And so people all over the world were speaking her name on Friday afternoon. Once we figured out what time Amafika would be back, we kind of knew a range. The other thing was to call in the conference line, like we do when we have our meetings, call in the conference line. Because Spirit said, if family makes her comfortable, the medical people said, you know, it's easier when family people are there. It came that her family, who is her family? Because I kept thinking her biological family, but when I finally let go of her biological family, I realized the family that Spirit was talking about was her summit family. And so that's when we did the, we sent out the communications, and we had people call in, because one of the things that everybody in the summit loves is the beginning and the ending of the summit event. And that event is like, it's like an upper room experience where everybody is there. They're singing and dancing and speaking their own languages and playing and chanting and what, dancing and just whatever. And so it came that if Chakasha could hear that and be comfortable, she would come back. And so that's what happened. Claire, we picked up Amafika, we went to the hospital, and Claire called into the line, and people were on the line, as well as the people who couldn't call in, who were speaking her name all over the world. We put Claire's BlackBerry on her pillow, on Chakasha's pillow, so that she could hear. The people on the call saying, I release and I let go. So, you know, when Chakasha talks about the family reunion, or, you know, what it seemed like, that's what it was. The people on the BlackBerry were in her ear, and they were singing, and Claire and I were holding her hands and in her ear saying, Chakasha, calling her name, come back, come back. Because, see, we didn't want her just to wake up. We wanted her to come back, totally come back. And so all of this was going on. They turned down the sedative. And, you know, the nurse said, oh, you know, that's probably taken an hour or so. And they kept singing. They kept singing. They kept praying. They kept chanting. But she could hear it this time. It was a familiar group of people to her because the voices, she knew them. You know, she had heard these voices over and over and over again. And while she's doing her thing on the inside, we're doing our thing, you know, in her room. And so after, I'm not sure the exact time or how long it actually took, she started to open her eyes. She started to open her eyes, and it makes me cry when I think about it, but it was so exciting, you know. She opened her eyes, and she started to respond, and she looked up. You know, and it took a while. It didn't happen as fast as I'm saying it. You know, it took some time to do it, but she came back. And the next thing was, would she be able to breathe on her own? Would she be able to breathe on her own for whatever the period of time was? And we didn't know what that amount of time was. They never told us that. The key was to keep her calm. And the nurse that she mentioned, she was from Guyana,
Guyana, I think it is, South America, Guyana. Wherever Orin is from, she's from the same place Orin is from. And she came in the room, and she didn't come on until 7 o'clock that night, so it was a couple of hours. We had been there for a while. And she came on, and when she came on as if she was a member of the summit body. And she came in, she said, "I need you to stay calm so I can get you off of this machine." It was the first time we had ever seen her. And she told Chakesha, "Can you do that for me?" And Chakesha nodded her head. And she said, "I need you to stay calm. I know you have a lot of questions, but wait until you get off the machine to answer them." At this time, we had turned the phone off because there were so many people. And you know, everybody by this time was shouting and screaming and crying and everything because, you know, we told her she had opened her eyes and come back and all of that. So we turned the phone off, but she had to stay calm so that she could breathe on her own. And, you know, this quiet, gentle voice that you hear on the radio program, Clara, it was Clara's turn to step up. Okay, and so I'm a speaker, and I left the room, and because Clara is a peace, she's just peace, walking peace, she stepped up, and she took her hand to keep Chakesha calm, and not only did she breathe on her own, she breathed on her own for 30 minutes. She passed that test. The woman came, the next nurse or next technician came in and said, "Well, you know, they're not going to take her off the machine because we tried this morning and she didn't last on, so we never responded because the woman didn't know what had happened in that room. She didn't know the healing that had occurred. So she was just doing her job and, you know, trying to prepare so we wouldn't be disappointed. But we knew that Chakesha was back." And so she said, "I'll take her blood." And she took her blood. "I'm going to run the blood test." And she ran the blood test, and she came back, and she said, "Her oxygen level is perfect." And we knew it. We knew it. And so she said, "I'll call the doctor. But I don't think he's going to take her off the machine tonight." And she called the doctor, and the lady from Guyana talked to the doctor. Is it Ghana? Where is it?
The nurse.
Her name is Janice from Guyana. She talked to the doctor, and she told the doctor, "I know she's going to be fine. I know she's going to be fine." And the doctor said, "Okay, take her off the machines." And she came back in the room, and she told Chakesha, she said, I pleaded for you. And we're going to take you off the machine, so I need you to be calm and stay calm." And we waited, and that night she was off the machine. When they took her off the machine, they combed her hair, they put lip gloss on her. We had to step out of the room, of course. When we came back, Chakesha was back. Glenn, did I make it in time? I was trying to get the story in.
Look, 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left.
I have 2 minutes. And
one minute left, sorry.
Okay, 1 minute. So how she got out of the hospital was we've distinguished it in the titles of the four weeks. She got on track with spirit. She watched her vision, and her vision worked for her. She celebrated who she was, and she became the man of the month, man/human of the month. Thank you all for listening. Chakesha, we love you. God bless you. Thanks to everybody who called in. Glenn, thank you. Clara, thank you. Brenda, thank you for your call. Sheila, thank you for your call, and I didn't get the young lady's name. The 323 number, and please be with us next week for Claire Lyon, Devon Show, Vision Works, and Glenn's Wealth Club on the 2nd and the 4th Tuesday of every month.
323-944, you're back on. What was your name?
Andreen,
thank you so much for your questions and your comments.
You're welcome.
Andrea, you have my phone number?
Takesha?
No, look at your face. Somebody get the number through Facebook.
I'm trying to get it. Takesha?
Henrietta, thank you.
Okay, are we still on?
Yeah, 15 seconds.
Takesha, say something. 15 seconds.
She just logged off.
Oh, she did. Okay.
Yeah, Henrietta, thank you. I just want to acknowledge you for doing a wonderful job of recounting Shakesha's experience.